each person can be way more productive because they have an AI assistant doing a lot of the mundane task. Mm-hmm. Right? Now their brain power can be elevated to doing higher level activities and having bigger impact and producing more revenue. So it will replace Charlie, essentially going to replace people that aren't able to use AI, right? Mm-hmm. Humans with AI will replace humans that don't have AI.
That's I love that distinction. So how do you turn your business into an actual brand? Well, my name is Bijal Patel, and I've had 13 years of corporate experience working at big Fortune 500 companies, and I'm taking all of that juicy firsthand experience and have brought it into my company launch. Within this podcast, you're going to learn about branding, vision, identity, mindset, and how to scale your business to the next level. So let's go ahead and own your brand. All right. I am so stoked. I have my client and my friend, my homie, my co-conspirer, Iggy. Can't say his last name, but don't need to.
Because Odigizua.
Say it again.
Odigizua.
Odigizua. Okay.
It's exactly how it's spelled. It just looks like those letters shouldn't be together on paper.
That's all. That's how Bijal works too, by the way. So I feel you and I appreciate that. But Iggy is a force, and I am stoked to have him on the podcast today, because when I think about somebody who I look up to and I value as a thought leader, as somebody who is a leader in their family, as a family man, as somebody who is looking out for people's best interests at heart, that's who I think of Iggy. And I think it's amazing. When you're on this entrepreneur journey, you can find a lot of moments where you feel alone, dead alone in the valley, right? And there's people like Iggy who are really about impact and they're focused on that. So that's my intro. Iggy, give us background into what the heck do you actually do? What have you done? Give us a couple minute intro on what you're all about.
Yeah. Thank you for the kind words. That's a amazing intro. Appreciate the hype.
Well, let's go. Let's go. Of course. I mean it.
My background is I love building acquisition systems, right? So I'm a very technical thinker when it comes to systems and processes. I started in the fitness industry. You know, I love health and fitness. I still try and take good care of myself and stay in decent shape. Definitely not in my prime in any sense of the imagination, but that's where I started. You know, I started fitness, and then from there transitioned from in person to online, and really struggled in getting my online business off the ground, and until I built like a acquisition system that essentially replicated all the principles that I used in my in person business.
Yeah,
to translate that online, and then from there, like the online business really blew up. Now, I was fortunate enough to build acquisition systems and operating systems for some of the big names in this space.
Heck yeah.
I name drop some people. Everyone will definitely know who some of those people are.
Right.
And anyone who's been in their world by proxy starts to know who I am, because they're like, these are some pretty incredible processes. Let me just go to this guy and ask him some questions. And that's kind of how, you know, I've gotten into the space. Went from online fitness to business coaching, and then went from business coaching to now launching our software for essentially helping entrepreneurs get more qualified appointments on their calendar. And it's a passion of mine. I love it. And it's been the hardest thing we've ever had to do, but it's been fun.
That's amazing. What an intro. So, okay, we're going to unpack that. So your company is called AI Centers, and your mascot, if you will, is Charlie. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit, because we get to work with you on that. And I think it's amazing to think about this brand and what you've built with the history. But let's go back a little bit to, let's go back to the part where you said that you're not at your peak level of fitness. That's astounding to someone like me, who's like, you know, on 75 hard, I'm like day 12, had to restart. And we were literally before we started recording the podcast, Iggy is like, hey, I always have an echo on my side. Can you know, are you hearing the echo? And I literally was like, it's because you have no body fat. like normal human beings. And so it's just like nothing but hard surface. So tell us a little bit about your journey in football. I think the audience would love to hear that.
Yeah. So I started playing football late because my mom, she's Nigerian. We're first generation Nigerians in our family, born in the US. So she was like, what are you playing sports for? It's like Harvard or nothing. Like, why do you want to play sports? Like, you should be studying, you know, engineering, you should be studying law, you should be studying medicine. Like, what are you doing talking about sports? It's a waste of time.
Totally. Total waste of time. And then there's injuries too.
Exactly. So we're out playing just for fun. And one of the coaches saw us and we were just crushing all their athletes, you know. So the coach ended up going to our house and begging us, like, you got to let these boys play some. You have to let them play some sports. I've never seen kids just so naturally athletic. Like, it'd be tragic if you didn't let them play. So it took some convincing, but my mom eventually let us play. So we started playing football in middle school and we were just natural, you know. And then I started lifting weights in middle school. And I'm very fortunate to have exceptional weight training coaches.
Wow. That
taught me how to force me to focus on the fundamentals, on the basics, on nutrition, form, and not lifting with your ego and making sure you're doing everything to protect your body. Because that laid a foundation for my love for just training and fitness. And I found that I love the process of preparation more than I actually love playing the game.
Oh my God. Of course you did.
Yeah. I love the idea. Like, for me, I wasn't a trash talker, right? Mm-hmm. My mindset was, from the moment we shook hands, I wanted you to feel the strength and the level of preparedness that I had, that you knew you were going to have a long ass night. Like, I didn't have to say anything. Just from the moment we shook our hands, you knew you were going to be in for an extremely long and painful, difficult night. And I didn't have to utter a single word. That's just kind of like a mindset that I would prepare with.
I wish I was playing football with you. Maybe I should have been the cheerleader. Like, I am so excited hearing that ferocity. And it's just so fun because, like, okay, so did you play through high school, college? Like, how far did you take it?
Yeah, so I got to college and I got injured. And then eventually when I got injured, I went through kind of an identity crisis, you know, where I was like, I was just this machine of a human and didn't have any kind of like focus with it. So for the first time, I started like questioning myself. And then I was like, why am I even like doing this? And I let myself get out of shape. I became like almost 40 pounds overweight. And what snapped me out of it was I was at a photo shoot because they needed some extras in the background for like a photo shoot in the gym. So they wanted people to look athletic or be in gym wear. When I saw that photo shoot, I was like, who the hell is that? Like, there's no way that is me. Like, no freaking way. So that's what kind of led me to kind of get back into getting into shape. And for the first time, because I wasn't on an athletic scholarship, I was on an academic scholarship, which is very different, by the way. Like, as an athlete, they roll out the red carpet. When you're on an academic scholarship, you just get enough to cover like bare necessity as far as tuition. And you have to figure out the rest. So I was working full time. And then so I had to figure out, well, how do I get into shape while I'm working full time? And so I essentially built out a system for myself to train and just getting in whatever I could to get myself back into shape. And I eventually got into better shape than I was when I was an athlete. As far as aesthetically, I looked better. I was stronger. Definitely wasn't the same kind of conditioning. But that's where people started asking me, like, hey, what are you doing? Like, how did you get into shape? And then I started teaching. I was also on this Christian scholarship. So I got into ministry and started helping with youth ministry, and then eventually went overseas and started building some churches, and then came back.
Okay. I have a few questions about this because I'm totally going to talk about the overseas trip. It's so fascinating. So cool. That's like a lot of what I admire about you, but this is so cool to hear all of this. When you were in college and you had the injury and you had to go through this like reforming of your identity and find your worth again in the world, not through playing ball, did you want to go back after the injury? Was that an option?
It was an option. You know, I always had the dream of playing with my brother because my brother was playing college ball at the time and he was on the path to go into the NFL. And I knew if I went back and kind of committed to that, that was a real possibility for me because he ended up getting drafted. And then my youngest brother ended up getting drafted as well. So just like going through that and seeing that, if I hadn't really become a Christian, you know, and found my faith and just found my love in, you know, studying and teaching people scriptures and just bonding with people and working in the youth ministry, I definitely would have pursued that path, right?
Yeah.
But by that point, it wasn't even a temptation for me to look and be envious of my brother and be like, hey, that should be me. I should go back in and try and do it. I'd already found a new passion, something that really filled me up. So it never was even a thought, you know, and
yeah.
I was content knowing that if I did it, knowing who I am and what I was capable of, that could have easily been a possibility. Right. So I was happy knowing like, if I wanted to pursue that, I could have been there, but I'm choosing 100%. This path.
Yeah.
I'm choosing a different way.
I love that. Cause what I hear and what you're saying is that even as a young age, you obviously had the work ethic, you had the practice ethic to be able to use your body, to use your mind, but you had so much agency in where you chose to focus your energy that it feels like you just had a lot of alignment, which made you feel fulfilled at a much younger age when a lot of people are lost. And that takes me to the question, I find this so fascinating and right on brand for you. This intersection of we have like athlete and then we have academic scholarship. Like, let's be real. These two things do not typically go together. Like,
yeah,
you have the meathead or you have the nerd. And that, like, the ability to intersect these things is one of the most fascinating things about you. What in the world is this? Tell us about it. What is this? What does it feel like to be this?
I've been a closet nerd for a long time.
Y'all, hold on. He said closet nerd as like the reverb may have hit off his like 4% body fat or something. Just wanted you to hear that he said closet nerd.
Yeah. So I've always cared about academics and I've always enjoyed learning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am a knowledge hoarder. Like, I love learning. I love figuring things out. And so I would be the guy who, if my teacher gave me, like, if I got like a 98 on a test, I would interrogate the hell out of my teacher and be like, why didn't you give me those 2 points? Like, what happened? Like, where did I get that wrong? Right. And then she'd be like, oh, you needed to, no, I did show my work. Right. Like, what are you talking about? And then I would get those 2 points back just so they're like, leave me alone. Here you go. Right.
Oh my gosh.
I remember I was named student of the year and all my friends were like, what, this guy, this party animal, like what, how?
It's a party in the brain too. You
know? Yeah. So I would, my teachers loved me because I would sit after class. I would get to class early and I would essentially set it up to where I wasn't wasting any time in between classes because I hated having homework. So I was like, if I don't want to have homework, I got to optimize my schedule so I can get it done during the day so I can go home, play video games after I work, after practice. And my mom always hated the fact that I would play video games at home. And she'd be like, why aren't you doing homework? I'm like, I don't have any homework. I'm done.
You're done?
No way. And she called my teachers and be like, yeah, he's ahead of schedule. He's already no assignments due. Can you give him work? I don't want to see him playing games when he's at home. He should be doing homework.
They're like, please don't send Iggy back. He's going to interrogate me. And I, like, literally, I'm the same way. Like, I got like an A minus in interior design in one of my classes on one assignment. I'm like at office hours. I'm like, hello, hi, professor. Where did we come up with this? assessment.
Like, and what are you doing here? Like, why are you not doing your job?
I feel like I had like the Indian handshake and like the, like, what's the problem? You know? And they're like, yeah, an A minus is really good. I go, in whose books? I go, we're not trying to play that game. We're trying to get a 4.0. They're like, you're the best designer we have. And you're arguing about, you want an A minus turned into an A plus. And I sure as heck got my A plus.
100%.
100%.
Some people don't like that though. Where it's like, they just don't want to give you the 100%. Like, they want to dock you a couple of points. I'm like, what are you, like, why?
Listen. Like, we're all humble and stuff, but like, when you see greatness, it's just better to go with it, you know? And so she saw where she faltered, and we were back to an A plus and everyone was aligned. And it's kind of funny. I think a little bit of our shared thing is the immigrant history. You know, it's like, I'm second generation here. Are you first or second generation here?
First generation here.
Okay. So you're even closer. And so being second generation here is like going for the education. You know, you talk about like, you're supposed to be an engineer or a doctor. And so was I. Like, I did computer science in undergrad. Did I tell you this? I was a programmer. Yeah, I did. Come on.
No, you didn't.
Failed to mention it. Okay. I was a computer programmer, and that's, I awesome, know Java, and I know C++, and I like know how to program. And I was in school and I wanted to go back to do interior design. And the last year, and my parents were like, you've lost your mind. You want to be a brick artist? No. Literally, the whole family, including my brother, said no. My brother would normally advocate for me. They were like, we don't want you to be a starving artist. So I went and programmed for 2 years. And then I switched over to grad school to do my master's of interior design. So it's just not common within the culture.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'd love to touch on is, you know, I'm obviously, my family of origin's from India. You're from Africa, specifically Nigeria. And I want you to tell us a little bit about, you know, your 3-year journey there and kind of how that transformed you even further into who we're looking at today.
Yeah, I spent first 5 years of my early childhood in Nigeria, right? So when I was 2 years old, my grandfather is a chief of our tribe in one of the tribes in Benin. And they have a tradition where you send your kids to live with the family to really get ingrained into the culture. So I spent 5 years there as a childhood, very traumatic, made me grow up way faster than I should have. But it also allowed me to, when I came back, to really appreciate what we have here in the U.S. And I almost forgot about that, right? So going back as an adult and having the opportunity to go back happened, and it was really divine the way that it happened, because I was on an academic scholarship at a Christian college. They were getting ready to launch a mission to start planting churches in Africa. And they were initially targeting South Africa as their first, where they felt like God was wanting them to go. And so,
they wanted to go to South Africa.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to go to South Africa. I actually showed up. I went to the wrong conference room and ended up in that room where they were talking about the mission trip to South Africa. And that room was filled with like 200 people. And everyone's talking about, like, they had everyone go through and like, hey, why are you here? I was like one of the last people to go. And so I stood up in a room and I was like, I honestly have no idea what I'm doing here. I didn't even know that this was a thing. So everybody was talking about, oh, they feel like God is calling them to go to South Africa and all these different things. They had all these like religiously proper answers to go. And then they decided last minute that they felt they should start and go to Lagos, Nigeria. Right. And so this is like a month later that they decided that, like, you know what, we think Lagos, Nigeria is where we need to go first. And so they had the conference again, and I show up to the room, and there was only like 20 people in that room.
You mean, let's do marketing math. You mean the show up rate after the initial South Africa was 200. We're going to Lagos, Nigeria. We had a 10% show up rate. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yep. It was hilarious. I was like, where'd everybody go? Like, what?
Are they lost in the conference room? I know. For me, last time I was lost and I showed up at the wrong conference room. All the people who said they were called by God, they must have got the meeting time wrong.
Yep. So It was so funny. When I looked at that room, I was like, wow, okay. And I looked up like Lagos.
Yeah. You know,
it was very dangerous. Everything that I read about it was like, this place is dangerous. It's very violent. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, what am I doing? Like, I've already committed, soft committed to the mission, because I ended up in the room and I was like, well, God doesn't do anything by mistake. So I probably need to be in that room. So the change to Nigeria, I ended up deciding, you know what? And they were like, hey, we'd love for you to come because you have ties there and we think you'd be a great addition. I was like, ah, dang it. And, you know, we're going to be able to give you a stipend to be down there. And I was like, ah, okay. All right, fine. So essentially doing that, like, if you go, you're like, this will apply, like, this pretty much the rest of your credits for to get your bachelor's. You can pretty much do it there. Right.
Okay.
So I ended up going, I quit my job, literally gave up everything and moved down there with no intentions of coming back. Right.
That's what years? How old were you when you did this?
I was 23.
23. Jeez, you're so. No, I was. You sound mature.
I was 22 when I went down there.
That you sound very mature, and you were there for 3 years, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Formulating years of the brain. So we're going to kind of tie this back into AI centers, and because I'm seeing so many correlations through your story, your personal story, which is deep and you've ventured far, is tell us a little bit for those of us who have not experienced Africa. I've experienced India multiple times. Tell you about Indian culture like the back of my hand. There is something about going to a third world country that you don't understand. You yeah. don't understand. I don't care if you fly into Jamaica and you're like, oh, I drove past the shacks. No, honey, it's not the same. You don't get it. Yeah. Like when you live in the country, when you spend, like we went to India twice growing up and we spent months there. And some of our family lived in like these three story homes. And there was family one, family two, and my family was on the third floor.
Yeah.
One shared shower and latrine, I guess. It's like not even a toilet. It's a hole in the floor that you go to and it's shared amongst like 30 people. And there's like, it's absolutely gross. Like the level of gross is, I just won't even go into the podcast. Yeah. And I remember being like, as an 8-year-old child, that I had no idea what India was actually like, no matter what my parents told me, that I'm entitled and like, we have all these luxuries here and aren't we lucky to eat? And I was like, oh, my parents are just blabbing on about the same thing. So give us a little bit of an inside peek to like, what about TIA? Like, what about This Is Africa? And like, what is the picture of actually being there for 3 years?
Honestly, I was terrified. I didn't go outside for like the first 2 weeks. I was just scared. I was scared shitless. I was just like looking out. Everything looked weird. People sounded weird. The roads were like non-existent. And then I actually mustered up the courage because the lights got shut off and we were all out of food and nobody was home, right? So I had to go to the street. I had to go down to the market and get some food because I was starving. So I ended up getting out and walking around. And one of the things that I'll say, Africa was rough, right? It was very rough. There's just like, it was still not a lot of like necessities that you're used to in a first world country. But it was third world country because of the disparity of wealth, right? Some places you'd see some beautiful mansions and then right next to it, you'd see a hut. Like there was just, the gap was ridiculous. But as I started exploring and talking to people, I found like that people were absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Right? It was absolutely incredible. And the more I got to know like true Nigerians, the more I realized, wow, I know exactly why I'm wired the way that I am.
Yeah.
One of those cool things was like, okay, I get it. Like I see why I think the way that I do sometimes and why like I can be very blunt and direct, because that's just really how they are. They'll give you the truth straight up. We were at an event and we ran out of chairs. And so I go to the lady and ask her for more chairs. She's like, you see that fat guy outside wearing white? And I'm like, I mean, he is a little fluffier on the edges, but I don't know if I'd come out.
Whoa. Yeah. That is so in Indian culture. If
I go to a wedding, outside wearing white. Yeah.
It's like if I go to a wedding even here, people are like, oh, you happy in marriage, huh? Gaining the weight. You were so skinny when you got married. Now very big girl. I'm like, okay. So your weight is a constant commentary. Like it's not offensive. It's
fact. Exactly. It just is what it is. Like it's a matter of fact. And that's how they speak. They're very matter of fact. So I went out there, got the chairs from them, and then I saw ladies meet each other. It's like, oh, girl, you've gotten fat. She's like, haha, yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. And it's just like, whatever, you know? So that was like the first shock. They don't accommodate to you whatsoever. And they're very, very aggressive. You know, I was ordering food. And I was like, I don't really I don't remember like the ingredients. It was a car or something like that. I was like, can you take that out? She was like, this isn't America. No, you eat. You're going to get what we have on the menu. We're not changing it for you. That's just how it is. Like they don't accommodate and they don't try to be polite, politically correct. Like, what is that?
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. That actually, there's a lot of, there's a lot of Indians in Africa, right? They migrated there there's a lot of similarities in the culture. Like you go to an Indian restaurant, they don't greet you. They just like throw down the thing. They give you the menu. They're just like, they don't want to talk to you. They're not expecting to have a tip unless they think you're American and you will. And you get what's on the menu. And that's at the end of the day. And it's a very, it's funny because there's a lot of warmth though in the culture. There's like a lot of warmth. There's a lot of family focus. There's a lot of togetherness. And so even amongst like a lot of the poverty that we saw, and same just like Africa, like in India, there's the high of the high, and there's the caste system is alive and well. And it's not like here in America, it's like, oh, let's not talk about it, or oh, we don't want anyone to feel bad. We might get canceled. In America, in India, the caste system is discussed openly, including at any level. Yes. People just kind of assume they're at that level. It's a very, very different cultural context. And it's so interesting to watch the fact that you were there when you were a young child and you were like still formulating the most formative years. You came over here, did a thing, did the football thing, XYZ. And then you went back there right before your brain was fully formed at 25, which I think is a great segue into AI setters, because I've gotten the opportunity to see the insides of it and to help you brand it. And it is just fascinating to watch the systematic thinker, the closet nerd, the football guy who's on the team, who loves practice more than the actual game, the guy who's squeezing in homework and optimizing his schedule while you're a young kid so you can play video games. It's like, all of this is kind of leading up to AI setters. So tell us about what the heck is AI setters and why is it revolutionary in this space?
Yeah, AI setters is, we deploy an appointment setting system, AI, called Charlie AI. And it was really born out of desperation because scaling an online business is really hard. Mm-hmm. Right? And after working with hundreds of different online business owners and analyzing and surveying the thousands of people that have gone through my programs and gone through my system, I found like those who are really successful figured out how to scale their ability to generate appointments from their leads just through sheer grind and just effort, right? Yep. And for me, I wanted to be able to solve a problem that I really struggled with and essentially thought like, how can I set anyone that I work with, or how can I set it up in a way where somebody does work with a coach, they can focus on implementing what the coach teaches and not get lost in the weed of trying to turn their leads into appointments. And Charlie is designed to do that autonomously, autopilot, and do it in a way where you have full leverage. Like you train it once, you deploy it into your system, you start feeding it your leads, and then you just let it work your leads and book appointments, and you get to focus on working on your business and showing up in the best way possible for your team and for your clients.
It's absolutely incredible because, like, we've all heard about like the chatbots, but like the extensiveness of what you've built is way beyond a chatbot. And I think it's worth just kind of talking about that a little bit. Like, how is this different than what someone would be like, oh, yeah, I know what that is. It's just AI in the chat. How is Charlie different?
Yeah, so Charlie is different because it's trained to have sales conversations. It's not just a chatbot. Designed to have like actual sales conversations and have human-like interactions with the lead and really build a connection with them. And then it's designed to give you in-depth analytics and reports on like how your process is working, but then also give you the flexibilities of being able to train it and give it nuance, and then it can follow up with the leads intuitively. Mm. So the goal for it to really be like a human appointment setter designed to enhance your sales team. Right. So not just you're not giving it a URL and having it scrape it and it just being a chatbot and just send massive blobs of messages. It's actually having real like conversations to the point where people go through our process to have a conversation with Charlie. And they're like, why aren't you using like you're an AI system company? Like, why aren't you using AI? I'm like, you have not talked to a single human being this entire time.
Wow.
Like, no freaking way. And that's really the interaction that everyone has. Like, there's no way I made it to this point and I did not talk to a single person.
Like, that's what I think is incredible, is like the effort that you've put into training Charlie to be like, sound like a human, act like a human, to be able to take on the tone of voice of like somebody who would be in tuned with what the other person is saying. Whereas a lot of bots, like you said, they just blob you to death. Mm-hmm. It's like, it doesn't even matter if you're a human. I mean, if you are like me and you're in the online space, how many VAs a day do you have attacking you in the DMs with unsolicited blobs of information? Yeah. It's like, it's 2024 and people are shifting away from the like direct response volume play and they're moving into the brand play, which is, who are you? Do I know, like, and trust you? If you've passed these things, then we can continue to talk forward. And one of the things I love about what AI Setters has done by building Charlie, which is the name of affectionate name of your bot, is besides just actually sales qualified appointments on autopilot using AI, which is magnificent and amazing for any freaking digital business owner. The thing that I think is so fascinating is that you're actually solving a business problem by bridging the gap between marketing and sales.
Yeah.
And no one talks about that because sales wants to act like marketing's has nothing to do with them because they're always crushing life. Unless they're not, then it's marketing's fault. Yeah. Marketing is like a bunch of bro divas that are like, oh, my copy is like untouchable. And they don't pretend that sales is actually what converts it. And there's this middle department between marketing and sales called conversions. So how does Charlie actually help bridge that gap between marketing and sales?
Well, essentially, marketing is going to generate the leads. And then the sales team is designed to turn those leads into like real opportunities for them to convert. And there's a lot of manual work that's required. And what happens is sales team lack lead to like the speed to lead. Mm-hmm. And what happens, and that affects conversion. So they start complaining about the lead quality being absolute shit. And then the marketing team starts complaining about the sales team not doing their job and being lazy, entitled pricks. And so where Charlie bridges the gap is it doesn't have any of that problem, right? It can take those leads, sort through the best quality leads, qualify them, and then push them over to the sales team. So now the marketing team can just focus on driving volume because Charlie's not going to get overwhelmed by it. And then the sales team can be happy taking the calls of the qualified leads that Charlie books in, because now they're not lost in the weeds talking to people who have no business being in their funnel to begin with. And that's where that friction comes.
Yeah. Right?
Is when you're lost in the weeds having those conversations, every bad lead that you talk to sticks out more than the good leads that you talk to. So then you start having this confirmation bias of, every lead that I talk to is garbage and a waste of time. When it's like, that's really not the fact. You're just too close to it and you're getting emotional about the situation.
100%. And this is where it ties back to your sports team playing football and like understand. I mean, playing at a collegiate level is nothing to cough at. And to understand that sports team mentality. Like, just because you had a bad day, bro, like, we still have a game tonight. Like, we got to go out and play, and the team is relying on us. And for you to be able to have that, like, high performance, high sportsmanship, which, like, you know, all those business owners want it. Not all of us have played collegiate level football. And so to be able to see that come through is incredible, because Charlie does not have a bad day like a normal sales guy does, or a girl.
It's not going to worry about his girlfriend breaking up with him and then put him on an emotional downward spiral, right? And that's really what I love about what we built. It's the fact that it's very reliable and consistent, to the point where you can scale your business and only put people in areas where they're really driving revenue. Right. So you either have like your marketers getting leads, or you have your sales team closing leads, or you have your fulfillment team servicing the clients and maximizing LTV. You get to have this really awesome business where, instead of having a ton of people doing grunt work that are low level, right, that are going to get tired of doing that anyways, you can have a machine in there doing it. And now your team is filled with high impact individuals, which makes it more fun. Right. Like, when you have when you're part of a high performing team, it's a lot more fun. Everyone's holding each other accountable. There's a real purpose and drive of what they're doing. And there's an overall buy-in towards, like, what we're doing matters. But now nobody's getting lost in the weeds.
100%. And I think that that begs the question that I know I had, where I'm like, are you creating a bunch of Borg? Like, if you're into Star Trek, I was a Star Trek Trekkie, and I loved Star Trek Next Generation. You may not anticipate that by my persona, the brand, but you know, me and my brother had one TV, and so, like, I got to watch Days of Our Lives, and then he got Star Trek, and so I'm into it. And so, like, there's the legitimate fear that, like, in come the robots, we're gonna, like, all Americans are, and people are gonna lose their jobs, and there's no more sales team, they're all gonna have to get fired. Does Charlie, like, actually replace jobs, or does he serve a different purpose?
Now, it's designed to enhance your team, right? AI is designed to enhance people and enhance their productivity, enhance their impact and the output that they're able to create, right? Charlie's never going to fully replace people, right? Mm-hmm. All it does is reduces the amount of people, the amount of butts you have to have in your in the seats of your business, right? To where each person can be way more productive because they have an AI assistant doing a lot of the mundane tasks. Right? So now their brain power can be elevated to doing higher level activities and having bigger impact and producing more revenue. So it will replace Charlie, essentially going to replace people that aren't able to use AI, right? Humans with AI will replace humans that don't have AI.
That's I love that distinction.
That's going to be it.
And so will Charlie, like, when we talk about BDRs, SD, you know, business development representatives, we talk about SDR, sales development representatives, which, if you don't know what that is, it's basically a setter. And then we have account executives, that's a closer. Like, are who does Charlie support? Do they only support the AEs or SDRs or both? Like, where do they fit in terms of the process?
They can support both.
Yeah. Right?
So where SDRs are really going to come in, as far as human SDRs, is going to be where when it needs to have a more complex and intricate conversation with a prospect, right? So let's say you have a two call close process. We have an SDR taking triages and then they're passing it to the AE, right? Charlie's going to allow the SDR to maximize their on-call time by doing all their outbounds, all their outreach, all their initial inbound qualifying, and then booking them to speak with the SDR. Right.
Yep.
So it can have that initial conversation to determine if this person is even a good fit to talk to an SDR versus the SDR being lost in the weeds and talking to people who aren't even a good use of their time.
Yeah.
Right. So in that situation, it enhances what the SDR is able to do, because now their time is just literally spent talking to prospects and qualifying them and getting them ready to speak with an AE.
Yeah.
And where it's able to support an AE is for our AEs. After they have a call, if somebody no-shows, they mark them as a no-show and Charlie's hunting them down to get them back onto their calendar, right? If they mark somebody as a sales fail, there's a 21-day delay where Charlie reach out to them, like, hey, you had a recent conversation with XYZ AE, you know, we'd love to get you back on the calendar to discuss promotion, to discuss XYZ, whatever it is. So it's able to assist them in allowing them to focus on just showing up to the calls, being present and being able to give 100% of their time throughout their day and not get lost in the weeds of following up with their leads, making sure they're giving them value and nurturing them. Charlie's doing all those things and filling in that gap.
That's so amazing because it's like, Charlie's doing the legwork. Like Charlie's doing that legwork, all the stuff that true high performing sales professionals, they don't want to be lost in the weeds. They don't want to do the mundane, the repetitive work. But as being business owners who've been successful and have been in business for years, we know that consistency and the boring work is the work. Like that 100%. Is the work.
It's 100%. So for me, it's like, how do I essentially set up my team to success, to where success is inevitable, right? And when it comes to like sports, and I'll use kind of like a sport analogies, you want everything that you're supposed to be doing to perform at a high level, you want it to become second nature, right?
Yeah.
And in order to get to that point, there's a lot of practice you have to put in and high volume of activity in order to make the fundamental second nature. Our goal is for Charlie to come in and automatically do those things, and that becomes your second nature, to where you can focus on mastering the initial point of conversion, right?
Yeah.
So you don't have to worry about getting good at doing the grunt work because it's going to do that for you. All you have to do is get good at connecting with the people you talk to and master that conversion. And now you have the ability to scale your business. They have the ability to make more money because they're maximizing their on-call time. So everybody wins.
Yeah, right? I love that. That's, I think, the coolest part about it. And, you know, one of the things we talked about Charlie is that Charlie is not going to be the robot that like in the movie takes everyone over and then we're all run by robots. Charlie is actually humanizing sales.
Yep.
And bringing more of a human nature to sales, because when the sales girl or guy gets tired or is busy with their own family, we're both parents. You know, I know you saw a little girl the other day. She's cute as can be. She's a little fiery, by the way.
Yeah, she is.
She's a little fiery. She's two.
Yep. She's going to be two in a couple months. But okay. She's so intelligent and scary.
She's two, kind of going on 20, and she owns you. I can tell very clearly that she owns you.
She tries very hard. I still draw the line.
No, you're not doing a good job.
She does a good job of pushing the button.
And you have a second one. You have a second one on the way.
Yeah. We're about to be overran.
I know. You're just good. Goodbye. So guys, this is Iggy. He thought one child was enough. I love it. This is awesome. It's beautiful. Congrats on that, by the way. And you know, my husband, Cethel, you guys connected, and he's into SaaS AI stuff, just like you. And we have two kids. Our kids are a bit older than your kids. And so we have an 8-year-old girl and a 6-year-old boy. And man, got to get a shout out Sayoni. Sometimes I watch the plays in her playbook. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's got Cethel on lock. Like she just, I think like the, when a girl is like potentially first in the order, like I think the father just is just handled, you know, it's a different story here. So
yeah, I'm looking at her and I'll like look at her in the way that she'll smile at me sometimes. And then she'll like come and she's like, hey, Papa. And just like,
this is like this. It's just,
oh my goodness. Just, what am I going to do with you when you get older? I hope to God that you don't manipulate.
She already is. Actually, she's practicing. I got to see her on a call the other day. And so it's so cool, though, to see that like Charlie is going to really help to enhance and to humanize the sales process, because the real truth of the matter is that a lot of salespeople are eventually might become parents. And even if they aren't parents, there's other things that people like to do with their time. But as being parentpreneurs, it's like, anything we can do in the world to help parents buy back their time is a worthy cause, to say, hey, you can provide for your family, you can have a fulfilling career and feel passionate, and you could always give it, you can give attention to your kids because they deserve that time. So I wanted you to be able to, so I wanted to highlight that and just say that's amazing. But wanted to let the audience hear from you. You've joined our Brandfluencer program. You're like maybe 3/4 of the way through it.
Yeah.
What was your reason for hopping in and realizing, hey, I kind of want to work on my brand. This is important for me.
Yeah, for me, once you get to a certain stage in business, you can kind of get away with having a mediocre brand if you get really good with the messaging and driving demand. But I always knew we're eventually going to have to work on the brand and get it to a point where the brand really reflects the quality and the time and attention that we put into the product, right? Mm-hmm. And so knowing that, I wanted to get ahead of it sooner rather than later. And for me, I wanted to understand like our mission. I want to get clarity on like getting very clear messaging on our mission, clear messaging on our tagline, and really understanding like how do we position the product in a way where people really understand like the value of what we do and how much time and attention, how much care we really put into everything that we do within our team and how much time and attention we put into caring for our clients. So yeah. That's kind of what led to me wanting to get ahead of that, because I know that's going to be coming down the pipe. I was like, I would love to get our brand dialed in. I'd love to kind of get ahead of it and then ask for some feedback inside of our community, inside a chamber. And then you're the only one that was like very blunt. You're like, this ain't it. let's jump on a call.
It's like, I was like, I just saw it and I was like, oh, this is not worth more than 3 words. And it's, you know, one of the cool things that came out of what we've done so far is your core behaviors. We have them down to 4. And one of them that I'll share is called purpose-driven greatness.
Yeah.
Purpose-driven greatness. And I just can't think of something that fits you better than what you've built in terms of your various companies, but also how you lead people is what's really cool. So touch on that as we kind of wrap up the podcast here is like, why, you know, with where you were brought up, you know, you were Nigerian descent and you came here as an immigrant, you went back. Why does it matter in the world that we've got a sense of a global workforce, and how is like AI centers and Charlie kind of helping bring people together?
For me, I really, one of the things that changed me dramatically being in Nigeria as an adult was seeing so many good people, so many people who are really talented, who are really, really talented. I'll meet some of these people and they're like just absolutely brilliant. And they had no way of getting out of their circumstance simply because of where they were born and their citizenship. Mm-hmm. For me, that's what led to me. I would have stayed in Nigeria much longer than I did. I was planning on staying there for the rest of my life. But what led to me coming back was realizing that I have an opportunity to actually build something in the United States and give these people an opportunity to actually get out of their circumstance, provide an incredible living for themselves, because I really believe they deserve it. And there's lots of people like that throughout the entire world who put a lot of time and effort into their education, put a lot of time and effort into developing their skill. And simply because of where they're born, they don't have the ability to level up and get out of their circumstance. So, and for me, like I get choked up seeing it, because I was like, man, the fact that they're in that situation and they still maintain a great attitude.
Yeah.
They were just completely helpless. Like there's just nothing they can do about it. Broke my heart, you know, and it led to me coming back. I was like, you know, what am I doing? Yeah, I believe in what we're doing, but I'm like, what am I doing here? I could be doing so much more to give back and to have a positive impact, and I'm just squandering it, you know? So from there, I was like, I came back. I was like, I'm on a man with a mission. You know,
I'm going to
does that. And I'm proud to say like 80% of our workforce are overseas, you know. Some of the people that I met in Nigeria that I was just like, you're absolutely brilliant. Like, what are you doing? You're stuck working at this restaurant because there's no opportunity for all mm-hmm. the education. You have your master's in this. They're working for me. They've still been working for me since throughout all the different projects that I've been a part of. I'm like, I'm going to bring these people along because they're incredible. And I want to give them an opportunity to have a better life for themselves.
It's absolutely like, it just gets me choked up. It gets me excited. And we met each other and it was instant connection because we share a lot of the same core values, even though you're very thinker, systems, data driven. I am people, feeler, emotions, like purpose driven, like, or just like, it's funny, but like polarity attracts people together because there's always going to be a yin to yang. And, you know, the vision behind Launch in our company is the short version is to drive social equity in the world. And so when I hear you talking about the, like, it doesn't matter where you were born, it's matter where we're going and we're all going together. I just absolutely love that. And I'm on board for that. And it's a beautiful thing. So great podcast. Iggy, where can people find you or find out more information about Charlie or AI Setters? Where's the best place they can go?
Yeah, probably the easiest place to go would be like charlieai.io to find out more about Charlie. And then as far as me, if you go on social media, I think it still works. If you type in Iggy ODI, I'm typically the first person to pop up.
Shocking.
So if you type in Iggy ODI, then you can easily find me on social media. But if you want to learn more about Charlie, go to charlieai.io and it'll take you to our website. You can request a demo and get plugged in and get a part of the revolution.
Amazing. All right, guys. Like, I am, as you know, on Own Your Brand. I am super particular about who I roll with. And I'm really nitpicky about it. And the only people that I will take on as clients, number one, but number two, the only people I'll bring on the show are quality human beings that I have vetted through our own process of core values. And I've got to see Iggy as a person, as a human being. I've seen him in groups. I've seen him in our groups. I've seen how the technology works. And like, when I say that this is a gracious, generous human being, when I opened it up like that, I mean it. And so go check out the software. I can't wait for us to finish the branding with it. It's already so fire. And thanks for joining me, Iggy.
Thank you very much for having me. It was an absolute, absolute pleasure.
So much fun. All right, more to come.